You're listening to the Autoblog Podcast, Episode 50, The Relaunch.
The Volvo XC70 and XC90 deliver the ideal combination of versatility and comfort. They're both rugged and dependable and come equipped with Volvo's advanced safety features. Visit www.volvocars.us for more information.
Hello and welcome to the 50th episode of the Autoblog Podcast. This is the relaunch episode. I'm John Neff, your host as always. And we do have some changes in the podcast, as I'm sure you've heard already and you'll hear throughout the show. One thing that hasn't changed, though, are my co-hosts, Damon Lavrins and Alex Nunez. How are you guys doing?
Excellent.
Doing great.
Awesome. Are you excited for the relaunch?
More than words can express.
I know. I wish we could have party sounds or balloons, but this is a big day and a big episode, and we've been planning it for a while and have had to do a lot of stuff to get it in place. So hopefully it comes out really well, comes out on time. And of course, we want to celebrate the relaunch of the Autoblog Podcast since we've reached this milestone. And to do so, we're going to give away some prizes just for listening to the podcast, because we really appreciate the people who have listened to the podcast for 50 episodes so far, and we want to attract a lot of people to listen to the next 50, 100, 500 episodes that we're going to do. So the Autoblog Podcast relaunch contest is going to start with this episode, and the first prize is going to be an iPod Shuffle. Because what better device to listen to your podcast on than an iPod? And it's going to be an interesting contest. What we're going to do is, in order to enter to win this, you're going to have to listen to the whole show. And at the end of the show, I'm going to give you a keyword. And you're going to take that keyword that I give you and email it back to us at abresearch@autoblog.com. And that's a common email address we use for all of our contests. So with that, I want you to include your full name, your address, and, of course, your email address so we can get back in contact with you. And what we'll do is we will accept submissions until the following Tuesday, and then we're going to choose a winner randomly to win the iPod Shuffle.
Where are we going to have the rules posted at, by the way?
I'm going to do a post on Tuesday, so that should be the day before this comes out. So everybody's going to be aware of the contest. We're going to have a post-ups to have all the rules in case you didn't catch it in the podcast itself. You'll basically have 6 days to enter, and like I said, take the keyword that I tell you later on, put it in an email to abresearch@gmail.com, and that's all you have to do to enter. You can only enter once, but we are going to do this for four podcasts in a row. So you're going to have four chances to enter and win. I'm not going to tell you exactly what we're going to give away in the next three podcasts, but I will say that the prizes are going to get better and better. But please enter this one, because you can enter all four. So it's going to be good times. We're going to have a lot of good stuff to give away. And hopefully by the end of it all, after everybody's heard the podcast, we'll have a lot larger audience, which is what we'd like, because we like doing these things and we like to know that there are people listening. So welcome to the Relaunch Podcast, guys. Let's begin. Today there was some big news, and fortunately, a lot of the news we're going to talk about today has to do with actual specific cars, which, you know, surprisingly, we don't get to talk about a lot since we do a lot of industry news. But last night, and Damon, I believe you caught it, the Mitsubishi Lancer 2008 model was kind of unceremoniously debuted. It just kind of showed up on the internet. And we've been waiting for this model a long time.
Yeah, it was kind of just a random drop. About 1 a.m. it went live. I think it was through Edmunds. And they didn't have a lot of pictures at this point, although we've come across a couple more photos. I think there's an engine bay shot. We haven't seen any interior pics yet. But the thorough redesign of the exterior has taken place, and it's pretty much taken all the cues we kind of expected. We've seen some spy shots and some renderings, and we've had a pretty good idea with the Concept X that came out, I think it was 2003, for the Evo. But overall, I mean, it's a much more attractive vehicle than the outgoing Lancer, there's no doubt about that, and I think it's even, to a certain degree, more attractive than the Evolution model, because, of course, those two vehicles, the Lancer and the Lancer Evolution, always, I mean, they were based off the same kind of underpinnings, but from an exterior point of view, especially here in the States, they were two distinctly separate models as far as their body shape is concerned, headlamps, tail lamps, the whole thing. So it's going to be neat to kind of see us here in the States getting a kind of a watered down version of the Evo. The three trim levels that we're looking at was DE, ES, and then GTS, which we're not entirely too interested in at this point. I think, you know, the Evo is the major one that we're really kind of looking forward to. But when we initially started getting some of the information leaked out about a month or so ago, we heard there was going to be a Rally Art edition that was going to have horsepower bumped up, six-speed manual, a couple other kind of racy features. And through that, Mitsubishi was aiming to compete with people going out for like the Subaru WRX and some of the other hotter imports. But the WRX is kind of what they were pointing to initially. Whether or not that's really going to come to light, whether they're going to actually build a credible competition for the WRX is another issue, but we're looking forward to seeing that. But as far as the exterior redesign is concerned, what do you guys think?
I mean, I think it looks good. It obviously looks a lot like the concept, but you know, you have the dichotomy between the base model and the sportier GTS. I think the GTS looks great.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
I mean, it looks great with the side skirts and the chin spoiler and the wing. The base model, I don't know. I mean, you can make a base model look good. I don't think the new Lancer looks as good if you take off kind of all the trimmings.
Well, I would say it looks better than the current Lancer base model.
Yeah, definitely. I will give you. I mean, you're going to be able to say that about. You know, anything on this new Lancer is that it was better than the old one. I don't think the old one has any candle to hold to this. The rear end, you know, one of the commenters on the post you did, Damon, said that the rear end looks very Alfa Romeo, which I do see that in the rear end as well, which isn't a bad thing.
I mean, when it comes to the commenters on this one, I mean, there were so many different styling cues that I think people kind of latched onto, because you can see like kind of the TSX thing going on. It's kind of got the Mark III super taillight thing going on. It's, you know, with the angular wedge design, like I said, I think the TSX was one thing. The Alfa Romeo, what model were they referring to? Because honestly, my knowledge of Alfas is pretty limited.
Mine's pretty limited too. So I'm not going to pretend I'm a Euro expert and can say what model off the top of my head. But you know, we didn't get any news on the Rally Art. We didn't get any news on the Evo.
Right.
So some interesting points that I want to make everyone aware of about this model, or these three models, is for one, these first three models, the DE, the ES, and the GTS, there's only one engine, and it's a 2-liter, 152 horsepower Myvec 4-cylinder, which I've told you guys in the recent past that I don't, for a base engine, I think that's fine. For all three models to have that be the only engine, I think that's a little weak. I'm surprised that there's not another four-cylinder that's not a little more powerful, or that if this engine is going to cover all three of these base models, that it's not, you know, maybe 160, 170 horsepower.
Or some respectable torque figures.
Right. I don't see them mention any torque figures in their press release, so we really don't know.
Which is a bad sign.
Yeah, it could be. Another interesting point about these models, too, is the transmissions.
Yeah.
There's going to be a five-speed manual offered, which is good. And then no automatic, just a CVT transmission. And what you're going to get on the GTS along with the CVT is a six-step Sportronic mode with magnesium steering wheel paddles. So basically, this is going to turn your gearless CVT transmission into a faux manual that kind of, I imagine what it will do is burp the throttle a little at six points along the way as you accelerate to kind of mimic a six-speed, which I think is the stupidest, you know, little techno trick ever invented.
Yeah.
You don't like simulated gearing?
No, I don't like simulated gearing, and I don't like manumatics, you know, that aren't, you know, the cool hydraulic clutch or DSGs.
Right.
I think they're just worthless.
No, it's really lame, which it really kind of worries me, because of course the new Evo is supposed to get all we'd known in the past is it's supposed to get a paddle shifter, and I really, for God's sake, hope they don't put the CVT in there. I know they're not stupid enough to do that, but
quite honestly, I don't think a CVT could handle what the Evo's going
to
put
No, not
out.
At all. I mean, I was going to say there a lot of advances have been made, but no, I totally agree.
Yeah, I think Audi is one of the few that has been able to put a CVT to a six-cylinder, and I don't think I could be wrong. It's been a while since I read that stat, but generally they're four cylinder, you know tricks, and not made for high horsepower applications.
The only company I know that makes a six cylinder too, it's Nissan, and that's in the Murano, and that's it.
Yeah. I have to say I was never intimately familiar with the base or Lancer models.
You're lucky that way.
But I have tested, current generation Evos, and I have tested current generation Rallyarts. And obviously the Evos are outstanding, not extremely livable in most cases, but I was really impressed with the current generation Rallyart. I mean, as kind of a young guy, it was definitely a car within my price range at the time where I thought I could have a really good time with this car. And it took a lot of parts from the Evo. I mean, it had the Evo's shifter, I believe, the transmission. And it shifted like a dream. It was just powerful enough that, you know, you couldn't overwhelm it, but you could have fun on the street.
It looked much better than the regular base model.
Much
also,
better, yeah.
Because it had a different front clip. So.
And it wasn't a poser like that OZ Rally Edition.
Oh, my God. That's horrible. A nightmare.
And it was like my modern day Nissan Sentra SER. I don't ever think it got the cred that the SER did, the Sentra SER did. But it was a good car. So I think moving that Rallyart up to battle the WRX is an awesome idea. That's going to be great. And I'm just as excited for the Rallyart that's going to have like maybe 230 horsepower as I am for the Evo that's going to be, you know, insane.
Well over three, we're sure. The only question I have when they're saying they want to compete with the WRX is the fact that unless they offer all-wheel drive, it's not going to be a direct competitor. I mean, you can throw like the WRX TR model into like a shootout with like a Mazda 3 and maybe a Civic Si and a couple other vehicles. But I don't think it's a real true competitor unless it's got all-wheel drive. And that's the major thing I'm really looking forward to finding out is whether or not it'll have all-wheel drive when it does come out, the Lancer Rallyart, that is.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you in the sense that, you know, every comparison test you read in a magazine where they throw the WRX in, it's always the odd man out because it has all-wheel drive.
And it always scores in the top three.
right. And... you know, I doubt they're going to give it all-wheel drive, but I don't think that would dampen my enthusiasm for it. I actually, you know, this might sound weird, but I hope they don't overpower it. Especially you look at something like the, you know, Caliber SRT4 with 300 horsepower going through the front wheels. You know, that sounds like fun, but I...
no, it's a bad idea.
I don't think I'd want to have that fun on a daily basis.
No, well, I mean, if you've ever driven the SRT4... especially if you start getting into some of their staged upgrades, the stage one, the stage or the stage two and up from there. I mean, it becomes a really unruly beast. I just haven't seen Dodge. Dodge can make good power, but getting it down to the wheels is a whole other issue. And of course, that's just the typical problem when it comes to a front wheel drive car is actually making it handle okay with that amount of power. I don't think the SRT version of Caliber is going to be able to do it. And I think, the Mazda Speed 3 is probably the best example of a company executing a relatively high amount of horsepower coming just through the front two wheels and actually executing it pretty well from all accounts. And I had the chance to drive one a while ago. They did a great job with it, but we shall see.
Yeah. I mean, last thing on the Lancer, overall, how important is this vehicle, this launch, and its success to Mitsubishi as a whole?
It's critical.
Enough said.
I mean, is it more important than... because I look at the Outlander, and that's a good start, but I don't think the Outlander...
The Outlander's not... that is not the volume seller that this is designed to be.
That this has to be.
No, I think the problem is right now they don't have any product that's really competitive, and this is going to be a competitive product if it's up to the fit and finish standards of a Civic. I'd say a Corolla, but the current Corolla is so out of date right now, but it's still selling hand over fist. Mitsubishi as a whole needs more products, and I really can't see just one vehicle really kind of pulling them through their current doldrums, but...
This is the Outlander is, I think the new Outlander is pretty cool. That's a great compliment to this. This looks really good to me. Hopefully it's as good as it looks. Obviously we're just, you know, talking about pictures here, but you know, that's a good 1-2 punch. I'm not crazy about the current Galant at all.
No, the current Galant I'm not crazy about. I don't think it's competitive. The current Eclipse, I think, is it's just not, it's not balanced. I think it's actually a really good looking car, the Eclipse, but I don't want that much power going through the front wheels again. And it's a tourer. It's not that carver that it used to be way back in the day. Yeah. And that's what people want. I mean, they'd love the equivalent of, you know, an Evo coupe. And,
right.
And the Eclipse is never going to give that to the public now. So I think they kind of went down a very wrong path with the Eclipse one generation ago, carried it forward to this one, and it's not helping. I think they could be selling a lot more than they are.
And then the Endeavor is still out, right? The big SUV?
I think so. I don't think anybody would know if it was, but...
Yeah, enough said there. Yeah. So.
Well, let's move on to another car, another small car that debuted in a sense this past week. And Alex, I believe you were the one that covered this one.
Yeah, this would be the official announcement of the Saturn Astra, which had been telegraphed, you know, for months, you know, since the summer. It's been being talked about as being imported as the replacement for the Ion. So they made it official, and they kept the name, which was something that actually I heard on the day before the release of the actual press release. I was at a GM thing in New York, and Mark Lenev referred to it by name in his remarks to the press. And I asked him about it later, and he was like, "Oh yeah, we're considering it." And the next day, of course, the press release comes out. So, but it looks like the plan is 3 and 5 door hatch in the beginning. They're going to be at the Chicago Auto Show. It is the Opel Astra with a Saturn badge on it. It looks like it's otherwise unchanged, and if you ask me, that's a good thing. And hopefully the General has ideas on bringing more body variants over, because there are some pretty cool Astra variants that you can get in Europe, like the Twin Top, which is a C+C, and the Panoramic, which has the glass roof that wraps right over from the windshield into the roof with the sliding sunshade, which is also...
That's a very cool
model.
Completely
cool. And there were a lot of commenters on the post that were, you know, that mentioned that one specifically, saying if that comes over, they'll just buy the car right away. So hopefully that would meet American crash standards, number one. And number two, if it does, hopefully the GM just does the right thing.
I really like the hatch design. Do they make like a high-performance model over in Europe?
Yeah, they do. It's called the Astra OPC. It's a turbocharged, and it's got 240 horsepower.
Nice. I'll take one of those.
Yeah, and you can expect that to be probably... I would expect something in that vein to be the Redline, either with the same engine imported, or I could see them maybe doing something like they do with the blown Cobalt. So
this is pretty much this is pretty much the last Saturn model to get completely redone. I mean, after the Astra joins the lineup, it's an all new Saturn. I mean, it's nothing of the old Saturn.
Yeah, that's it. As they say in the press release, there will be no Saturn more than 20 months old in the lineup.
Which is amazing that they did that turnover of the whole brand.
Complete revision of the brand, like you said,
in less than 2 years.
And you know what? And the stuff and the product is not it's not bad stuff. This is good stuff. I mean, we posted the review of the Aura earlier this week. The Aura is a good car. This, by all accounts, looks like it's going to be a good car. And we've had commenters who've driven it in Europe.
And it's not like the Astra's an old model. It's only like a year or two old in Europe. Right?
No, and this is we're getting the revised one that was just introduced at the
We're not getting old hardware.
Bologna.
And so Saturn's basically going to be a 4-model lineup with the Astra, the Aura, the View, and the Outlook. 3 of those 4 are going to be direct transplants from Opel. And the 4th, the Outlook, is going to be Lambda-based, along with the GMC Acadia.
Well, the Aura is not an Opel transplant.
Oh, is it? Doesn't it share a platform with...
The Vectra is on... now I can't remember the platform.
But, I think you're right that they're related.
No, the Aura is on the... They're related, yes, but the Aura is on the extended version of the platform, and the Vectra is not.
They will be brought
together.
The
Aura is built in...
And be 1-to-1 with the next revision of the Vector, though.
I think is 2009, when we're supposed to get the station wagon too. So,
okay. But still, nevertheless, we went from a Saturn that just had gone so far, I think, off its intended course, And it went from having such, you know, way back in the day, I remember it was like the college car. It was like the car, if you were a father, that you had to buy your daughter. And somehow it beefed up its lineup, which is where everything started going very wrong. Had horrible designs, you know, fit and finish issues, plastic body panels, which, you know, sound good in marketing but aren't good in execution. And boom, in 20 months, flipped it over. And we've got all these designs from Europe. And, of course, I think every person who reads Autoblog spends at least, you know, 4 days out of the year cumulatively arguing and begging that European model should come over here. So, I mean, GM has granted our wish. They've given us a few European models, you know, just direct ports here, have them. And, you know, we've, you know, endlessly talked about...
Yeah, because the View is a direct port. Yeah. The View is a... complete port also, even though it's built the View's going to be built in where, Mexico?
I believe so, yeah.
And hopefully if this high-power version of the hatch comes over, we'll actually maybe spur Ford to bring over the right Focus, finally.
I have my fingers crossed for Ford because, listen, they're doing this Cobo Hall, you know, secret handshake reveal thing to everybody, which leads me to believe that they have good stuff in the hopper. It's just not ready for us to see.
You know, what makes me wonder with the Astra and the Astra, again, looks good on paper, looks good in pictures, and so we don't have any reason to suspect it won't be good in reality. What does this do to the Cobalt? I mean, the Cobalt, quite frankly, it's old now. I mean, it's not Corolla old or Focus old, but it's long in the tooth compared to some of the new models, and under the same umbrella as the Astra. I mean,
it's an interesting question because first I would hope that at some point that GM brings over the Astra sedan, which is a million times better looking than the Cobalt sedan, even though that's, you know, you can look at it and you can see the roof line and all the stuff that's the same. I don't know. I mean, unless it, you know, again, I think these are going to be kind of positioned a little upmarket of Cobalt. I mean, if you look at Saturn in general, I think it's positioned a little higher than Chevy, although that may change now with the Malibu.
See, there's that vacillation back and forth with these brands where it's like they go a little up, they go a little up market, they come a little back down. And yeah, I agree that I think the Cobalt is going to be, I don't know whether intentionally positioned or not, but you know, in terms of what you're getting for your money and how much you're spending, it's going to be under the Astra. But at the same time, I think this market of small cars, this segment, the whole segment is moving up market. I mean,
I agree. The other difference, though, with Cobalt is it is two completely different body styles.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 2-door coupe and a 4-door sedan. So maybe that's why they're just bringing the hatchbacks over so that they don't really step all over the Cobalt. So that, I mean, the Cobalt, you know, people buy them. I see plenty of them out around. So,
you know, it's a great seller for Chevy. And, you know, it's like the Corolla, which you mentioned before. That's, 7 or 8 years
About
old
that,
by now.
Yeah.
That's still selling hand over fist. The Corolla is selling incredibly well, no matter how hard the automotive press knocks it. You know, I think incentives and the Chevy brand name is doing well for it. But I quite honestly, I have no idea what's up next for the Cobalt. I haven't heard anything or seen anything or know when the next redesign for it's going to be. So it sounds, from what I've seen, it sounds like Chevy's going to be with it for a while.
Yeah, and let's not forget that Pontiac G5. Really
no,
fantastic.
let's forget that Pontiac G5. Thank you very much. let's get it out of our minds as quickly as possible.
Well, speaking of rental cars, the Dodge Avenger.
Burn!
Yeah, it was
brutal. Oh, my God. Yeah, you're right off the Christmas list with DCX.
We saw this is obviously the base model that came up in Spy Shots today. And who wrote this up? John, that was you.
Yes, of the production Dodge Avenger, which some spy photographers snapped a pre-production model and got a few shots of it. And I wrote the post up, and I thought I was being even-handed and fair when I said that, you know, okay, this is the production version. All of the show pieces from the concept are gone, so it doesn't have the deep chin spoiler. Right. It doesn't have the rear deck spoiler.
Which we can probably expect to see in their, you know, SRT version
some
or something like that.
Some type of model. RT model, yeah.
Well, hopefully the RT will have some of that stuff back.
Yeah, it doesn't have the big wheels. What did remain, which I thought was kind of odd, was these giant fender flares on each over each wheel. Those remained. So... you know, when I posed the question, you know, this is always the concern when you see a great kind of concept at an auto show that's destined for production is what are they going to do to it when it goes through the vetting process and, you know, the bean counters get a hold of it and the regulations. And quite honestly, our commenters hands down thought Dodge had failed in this transformation from concept to production vehicle. I think the overall ire of the public was aimed directly at the set of rear doors.
The rear doors. There's way too much happening there.
Where the, you know, you've got this kind of fender sweep that, you know, the Charger has,
hump.
The Charger hump. Yeah. But then you have this this kind of up kink in the bottom window line that goes up to meet the C pillar, and then you have this big plastic thing in the corner.
The plastic thing is unconscionably bad.
You know, and quite honestly, it looks like anybody sitting in the back seat, if they turn their head to the right, they're basically going to see, you know, wall and not window. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a very good feeling sitting back there.
What's the purpose of that thing?
The plastic thing that creates, it's to make it look like the window.
Right, but
has
why not just have the window go back?
Shape.
Well, probably because the glass would be too long, okay. And then it wouldn't slide up and down. I mean, they do that, but usually when they do that, they, you know, put a little strip so they can mark off where the movable glass is versus where the stationary
right.
glass is.
This is nothing like that. Yeah, no, and this appeared actually on the Sebring, or something similar to it was on the Sebring as well, wasn't
another
it?
Another one that has visual issues.
Yeah. Yeah, another love design of our age. I mean, I guess that's the real big question is, does the Avenger look better than the Sebring? I think it does look better than the Sebring. But I guess overall, I think we all would say that even if you do agree that it looks better than the Sebring, that doesn't mean it looks good in itself.
No.
Yeah. You can probably rattle off a bunch of things that look better than the Sebring. The Sebring sedan. Like I said, I have no problem with that convertible. I think that looks nice.
You know, and to be fair, we are looking at it looks like we're seeing the very base model. I mean, this is
base models always look
right.
Like
I mean, we just said it about the Lancer that it didn't, you know, it didn't have the flair.
So yeah, let's see this thing with bigger wheels and nicer, you know, bigger nicer wheels and maybe some more, you know, stuff going on up front. And
but no, I'm going to agree with Damon. It does scream rental car in these pictures.
Absolutely does.
I don't know.
It's a little. I'm a little disappointed.
So what's happened? I mean, Daimler Chrysler used to be avant-garde in the styling department, and now they've
I have no idea what happened because you have other stuff going. You have the Caliber, which is weird looking. Uh-huh. You have the Compass, which, you know, we've, you know, discussed over and over again on the website. I don't know.
I wish they had followed the path of the Magnum more and not followed the path of the Charger. I wish the Charger were just a four-door sedan version of the Magnum, even if it did compete directly with a 300C, let's say, or something like that. Or not directly, or, you know, even if it cannibalized sales a little. The Magnum, I think, is awesome in its macho-ness and its, you know, boldness and aggressiveness. And I think the Charger has that oddness that the Avenger has.
I disagree a little bit. I think the Charger RTs look actually pretty good. Although I think the best looking car, the best looking DCX car, is the Magnum SRT, mm-hmm. because that thing is just so tough looking. It has the huge wheels. It's slammed. It looks great, and I wish they had more cool stuff like that.
But no, it's just apparently the Magnum got all the pretty jeans and. And the designers felt the need to smack the Charger and the Avenger with the ugly stick a few times, but
I can't get over this back door on this Avenger.
It's distracting, isn't it?
It is really distracting.
Before it distracts Alex too much and he goes on 20 minutes on why the back door is not good, let's move on to the next one. This story is about Acura. And news is coming that a V8 is in the works for Acura, which is significant news because, as most people know, Honda and Acura have never really fielded a V8 in a production model.
They've been bucking that trend for a long time, yeah.
For a very long time. They've, of course, done motorsports where V8 and 12-cylinder power plants were necessary, but they've never transferred that over to the production realm. Rumors of this have been, you know, going around for quite some time. And as a matter of fact, the next generation NSX, for all we know so far, is destined to have a V10 in it. But quite honestly, Acura has been held back. I mean, it's been just, you know, kept underwater, drowning, because it doesn't have a V8 to compete with Lexus and Cadillac and even BMW and Mercedes and Audi. Mm-hmm. You know, a V8 is just required. I mean, the fact that you are trying to live off of high-tech V6s is a little too much, to ask of the public.
Well, you're dealing with these really, really high-strung engines, and the people that are buying luxury vehicles are not particularly interested in a high-strung engine. You know, that's always been one of the appeals of Honda Mills, is the fact that they've always been these really, really peaky, fun-to-drive engines that you had to rev the hell out of, and that's not what your typical luxury buyer is looking for. And even their V6s, where they don't have, you know, an 84 or 9,000 RPM redline, they still need to be wound out pretty hard to get any really serious power. The one thing that I was kind of, you know, we saw this coming to a certain degree, and like you said, it's been rumored for a while, but with Acura starting to offer the RDX with a turbocharged four-cylinder, I would have liked to see them, because they can produce, you know, sizable torque figures, which is really what they're saying they need to have is more torque, out of a turbocharged V6, as an example. You know, do a twin turbo, sure, or a single turbo, or do one of the dual turbos like BMW's using. You know, I think Honda's resources, since they've never built a V8 before, built it for consumer use, you know, could pull their resources towards a turbocharged power plant that's going to produce the same amount of power as a V8, maybe get better fuel mileage, and I think that's the direction they should be taking. Now, of course, there's a lot more to the market, and I think people see V8 versus V6, and it doesn't matter if there's a twin turbo on it or not, they're going to go for the V8, and I think that's kind of what's held them back. But I would really, really like to see Acura really kind of pushing the turbocharged end of the spectrum a little bit more than having to rely on a big, you know, 8-cylinder lump.
Well, you know, I have two things to say about that. One, I think in the luxury segment, that's not a segment, if I were an automaker, that I would want to be the guy doing something different. You know, you have everyone offering their V8s, or at least their V8 models, and then you're the guy with the turbo V6 and everything. Or
your Lincoln.
And that's just a segment where, you know, you kind of want to be doing what everybody else doing. You just want to do it better.
We're not dealing with car enthusiasts per se here. We're dealing with people that want, you know, they want an appliance. They want a utility.
They just want the best in the world. I mean, you know, that's what they want. And to them, V8 is better than V6 because it's two more. And that's, you know, basically their logic.
More equals better. Yeah.
I mean, the second thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Acura does not have a rear-wheel drive car.
No.
I mean, that's another
thing. That's a huge issue, and you can't, I mean...
A V8 in a front-wheel drive car...
Northstar.
You know, that's all you have to say is Northstar. And, you know, and again, it's a particular brand of fun to have that, but it's not a fun that you want to have every day.
No, not at all.
And, you know, these luxury consumers aren't necessarily looking for fun. They're looking for instant power on demand. Right. That a V8 gives, and you know, if you stab the throttle in your front wheel drive V8 powered Acura, and it goes darting off into the left, that's, you know, not exactly what they're looking for. So,
which leads me to believe it's got to be an all wheel drive application, at least on the Legend RL.
No, that was what I was going to bring out. They're going to bring out their super wonderful handling all wheel drive system for it, which, I mean, that's just going to become a standard feature on all Acuras.
I think that is the actual branded name, right? Super Wonderful.
That's the branded name. But if they do that, now you're dealing with only all-wheel drive models, probably, because I don't think they're going to... I mean, do either of you think they would actually bring out a rear-wheel drive model?
Well, you know...
They'd have to develop a platform.
After the concept that debuted in L.A., the concept we talked last podcast, I mean, that vehicle is so obviously, you know, front engine rear wheel drive with that huge, massive hood that they have on there.
Long hood.
But of course, that's 2020 what they're looking at. I don't see Acura making a rear wheel drive vehicle anytime soon, but, you know.
But see, so now you're going to have a big car, V8,
right?
all-wheel drive. Now this is going to be a pretty big, heavy car,
yeah.
You know? And then that seems to just go against the whole ethos of Acura.
Well,
so
I guess I have more faith in Acura that if they do decide to build a V8, it's going to be a relatively small displacement one.
Compact, yeah.
And it's going to be shoved as far back into the engine bay as they can, especially if they're going to promote any kind of handling characteristics in it. We will see. I mean, at this point, you know, what was said in the article we were getting this from was we're going to see in Detroit in a couple weeks. That's most likely when we're going to see something come out about the engine and possibly a new drivetrain, but we're not holding our breath on that one.
Well, it'll be interesting. Detroit will be interesting. As Alex mentioned, both Ford and Daimler Chrysler are going to have kind of sneak previews for the press this week, which I am going to, which is awesome. I've never really been to one of these things, so I'm going to ham it up and see if I can... I'm sure I can get a lot of information, but I'm also sure that I'll sign my life
right.
away on a contract that says if I reveal anything, I will be shot, so... So that will kind of stink having to hold my tongue for a few weeks, yeah. But I'll deal with it with the best I can. All right, so let's move on to the last item of news we're going to talk about, which is the EPA's new rating system for fuel economy, which was kind of unveiled today. And from what we can tell, from what was said, basically all fuel economy. Measurements, or I should say the mileage ratings of cars, they're all going to drop pretty much as soon as these standards go into effect. And I'm looking for the percentages of how far, and I think somebody said like 8 to 10%.
That was on the good side of things. That was going to be average. I mm-hmm. read a report today, I'm actually trying to find the article as we're speaking, that for the Prius it was going to be a huge drop. I mean, a really massive drop. There it is. Yeah, 30% highway and 20% city.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
That's via the Detroit News, by the way.
PR problem.
That's smart.
Yeah, that's. I mean, well, you talk to any Prius owner, they say, "Oh, I get 52 miles to the gallon," and we all know that's complete and utter BS.
Listen, all the EPA mileage estimates were BS.
If you talk to a Prius owner who, drives 15 miles on the highway, yeah, they get 35 miles per
right.
gallon. If you talk to a Prius owner who lives in a city, they probably do get 50 miles per gallon. But that's the trouble with hybrids is that they have completely different natures depending on how you're driving
right.
them. And, it's great that this new system is going to bring that into a more realistic focus. And it kind of reminds me of the SAE, the Society of Automotive Engineers, when they redid the horsepower ratings. And everybody went down when they revised how they calculate horsepower. But it was interesting that the Japanese really took a hit on some of their engines, and the domestics hardly felt it at all.
Yeah.
They had been underestimating their horsepower in the old system, and it happened to fit right in with the new system.
You know, at the same time, though, it wasn't. I don't think anybody took a huge hit in that. I mean, we're talking, I think the most I'd heard was maybe 10 or 15 horsepower. In this case, though,
no, I think the Camry took a big
really?
Hit up over
no,
20.
Wow.
Yeah, the V6 Camry.
But
really,
anybody that's listening to this podcast knows that if they're going to go out to a dealer and shop for a new car, when they look at those EPA mileage estimates, they're posted on the sticker. They know they're nowhere near what they're actually going to get in real life,
yeah,
and
I
never
mean,
have been. I mean,
you
it,
have
it's
to
been
like
since,
hold your nose and chew gum since, and not have the air conditioner running. And
yeah, no, it's under the most ideal conditions is when you're going to get anywhere close to those.
Yeah, it's completely crazy. So I haven't driven a single car yet that has, met the supposed expectations set by the EPA ratings on the sticker. So. I personally don't see this as being that big a deal. Sure, the numbers are going to drop, but it's, better closer to reality is better,
oh, totally.
If you ask me. So at least now what people are going to see is going to be more in tune to what's being advertised.
We should also mention that automakers have actually developed a website called www.mileagewillvary.com and to educate consumers about why the fuel economy in all the vehicles will be dropping because they don't you know, they don't want to, I guess, a buying public freaked out that their cars are getting worse mileage than ever. And that's kind of, you know, that's a general argument. And our comments a lot is that people are amazed that, you know, their carbureted V8 muscle car back in the day could get 35 miles per gallon on the highway. And the new hotness of today, you know, struggles to get 28 with a high-tech, you know, V6 or whatever.
Fuel injected and all that, yeah.
Yeah, fuel injected with all the latest technology. It's a good point, you know, but I think everyone has to realize that what's been added to the car over the years is incredible. I mean, the amount of safety equipment alone has to, you know, account for at least, you know, 20% or 25% of the weight increase that cars have seen, you know, in 20, 25 years. And just, you know, more amenities that we want in our cars. I mean, the weight of cars has gone up literally unchecked. Anything we want.
We pack them full of stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, that would be the easiest way to get back to better fuel economy is to build lighter vehicles. I mean, talk to anyone who builds a Lotus and you'll find
even
out.
Oh, sure. But even entry-level vehicles have a ridiculous amount of options that you can get. I mean, you can get a sunroof on, you know, any entry-level vehicle pretty much as an option.
And that's not a bad thing.
And it's fine. I think offer everything and let people buy the car that they want and spec it out the way they like. I'm totally for it.
I think it's more with the base of the car. I mean, you look at, like, the Volkswagen Rabbit. That's a heavy car. I mean, it's been a heavy car for a long time. But you get it with no options, and it's still a heavy car. Whereas you know you could take another vehicle, and you know maybe this is a bad example, so don't quote me on it. But you know, you take like a 3-door Focus hatchback, and the thing is, it's light. You know, you get it with a base engine, and it's still fun. Or even you know, let's say the Mini Cooper, the base Mini Cooper. By virtue of its lightness, no matter despite the fact it has a pretty weak engine, it's fun. And it gets incredible gas mileage. We did another post today on Mini touting that the base Cooper is going to get 40 miles per gallon on the highway. So that makes the point right there that if you can keep the vehicle's weight down, the core vehicle's weight down, that is the easiest way to get back some of that, you know, 10% lost fuel economy that these cars have, you know, somehow managed to lose over the years as they got more equipment. And again, I just think weight was just dropped from the priority list altogether in the modern era. So, all right. Well, I think we've exhausted ourselves. I know I'm tired. But I'm really proud. I think our 50th episode, our podcast relaunch has gone well. And now it is time to reveal the keyword for the Autoblog podcast relaunch contest. And the keyword is going to be Countach, as in Lamborghini Countach. So if you'd like to enter to win an iPod Shuffle, just send an email to abresearch@gmail.com and include the keyword Countach along with your name and your address. And that is how you enter. Please only enter once for this contest, although you'll be able to enter again 3 more times as we do this with the next 3 podcasts. And if you win, you can only win once, so also keep that in mind. But again, like I said, you can enter all 4, so hopefully you're one of the lucky ones who wins a prize. And we're not going to reveal what we're going to give away in the next 3 podcasts, so you'll have to keep subscribed to the Autoblog podcast and find out. So, speaking of which, if you go into iTunes, you'll also see that we can now be found in the automotive category of iTunes, which...
Crazy.
What a novel concept.
Yeah, what a novel concept. I'll never claim to be an expert in technology, but I was pretty disappointed in myself when I learned that the Autoblog podcast, for the past 50 episodes, has not been in the automotive category of iTunes.
What were we listed under, out of curiosity?
I don't think we had a category, actually. I know that you could find the Autoblog podcast in iTunes by typing in Autoblog. And it kind of just came up this blank, very blah, you know, where did this podcast come from? We have been working to kind of fix all of our iTunes descriptions and categories and a little photo that comes with it so we look all professional, because that's what we're trying to do now, is be more professional.
At least it'll look that way.
Yeah, at least it'll look that way. We'll let you decide if we succeed or not. So hopefully you'll subscribe to the Autoblog podcast and at least listen for the next four episodes, or the next three episodes after this one, to win one of the prizes for the Autoblog podcast relaunch, and then stick around after that and see what else we have to say. So until next week, when we give away another prize, we will talk to you later.
Take care.
Bye, everybody.
The Volvo XC70 and XC90 deliver the ideal combination of versatility and comfort. They're both rugged and dependable and come equipped with Volvo's advanced safety features. Visit www.volvocars.us for more information.